I would suspect that most everyone in here at one time or another has had children or grandchildren that were engaged in sporting activities. Most likely, when they were engaged in sporting activities, you went down and stood on the sidelines and rooted for them and their team. Most of us were a little bit too old at that particular time to get engaged in that game. But we find that occasionally there will be those who, for whatever reason, decide that they don't want to play the game. They'd rather root somebody else on. Nations are that way also. Oftentimes you will find nations that don't have the courage to do whatever it is that they feel like they want to do, and yet they will set back and they will very quickly root for whoever might decide to take advantage of someone else. We find that to be the case oftentimes throughout the Bible. When you look into the Old Testament, you find that Israel, as they left Egypt and they started crossing the wilderness, the desert, whatever it might have been at that particular time, whether it was a lot of trees and grass, whether it was a whole lot of sand, whatever it might have been at that particular time. They ran into people who didn't want to help them. They ran into people who wished them the worst of luck. They ran into people who actively tried to stop them. When you look, you find that Edom, the ancient kingdom of Edom, was one of the sideline rooters. The Edomites, if you recall, are descendants of Esau, who was, of course, Jacob's brother. The reason they were called Edomites is because in Genesis chapter 25 at verse 30, we find there that Esau had gone in and asked Jacob for some of his red stew. Therefore, the text tells us, his name was called Edom. The Edomites and the Israelites were considered to be brethren. In Deuteronomy chapter 23, at verse 7, God specifically told Israel, "You shall not detest an Edomite, for he is your brother. You shall not detest an Egyptian, because you are an alien in his land. But most importantly, you shall not detest that Edomite. He is your brother." This was probably somewhere in the neighborhood of maybe, 400 years or so after the incident with Esau and Jacob, as this took place when God gave them these instructions. They were brethren. As brethren, you would think that they would watch out for each other, that they would be concerned with the health and welfare of one another. Yet we find as we continue reading down through there that they became enemies of the Jews or of the Israelites. It goes back, somewhere near 400 years and the things that happened at that particular time. If you go over and you do some reading in Genesis, you find out about the animosity that there was between Jacob and Esau. You understand that Esau was somewhat bitter toward his brother because of the birthright incident. This bitterness, regardless of their meeting on the road when he was leaving Laban, this bitterness did not subside. It was still there. And 400 years later, it was still rearing its ugly head. I thought about stopping right there and going another direction, because we see that very same thing happening in times today. Something happened a long time ago, and we see it having its effect on us today. We can look at the things in the worldly sense, the racial attitudes, but more importantly, we look at things throughout the Lord's church, where something happened to grandma or grandpa, and it's remembered even to this day that so-and-so's family did such and such to my family, and I can't worship with them because of it. Just like Edom and Israel should have been looking out for each other's best interest, rather than holding grudges, we need to be looking out for each other's best interest just the same. Because Edom didn't look out for Israel, because Edom was a sideline rooter and looked for bad to happen to Israel, doom was pronounced on them. If you go over to the book of Obadiah, it's not very long, the book of Obadiah in the Old Testament, you will find there that the Lord pronounces judgment on the Edomites. In verses 3 and 4, it says, "The arrogance of your heart has deceived you, you who live in the clefts of the rock, in the loftiness of your dwelling place, who say in your heart, 'Who will bring me down to earth?' Though you build high like the eagle, though you set your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord." Edom thought because they lived where they lived that nobody could touch them, that they would be safe from anything that happened to them. Yet Edom was what we might call a very wimpy nation. They lived in the hills in relative security, but they had no faith in God. They only trusted in their own might. Yet they had no real military strength. The reason Edom got along so well with all the people around them was not that the people were afraid of them. It's just where they lived, it wasn't worth the effort to try to flush them out. So people left them alone. They could not have, had they wanted to, subdued Judah. Yet they enjoyed watching other people fight it out with them. Look at verses 10 through 14 of Obadiah. "Because of violence to your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame and you will be cut off forever. On the day that you stood aloof, on the day that strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you too were as one of them. Do not gloat over your brother's day, the day of his misfortune, and do not rejoice over the sons of Judah in the day of their destruction. Yes, do not boast in the day of their distress. Do not enter the gate of my people in the day of their disaster. Yes, you. Do not gloat over their calamity in the day of their disaster, and do not loot their wealth in the day of their disaster. Do not stand at the fork of the road to cut down their fugitives, and do not imprison their survivors in the day of their disaster. They sure looked on while other people did it, and they sure wanted to take advantage of the situation when it was there. Be kind of like the football player that never made any tackles, yet every time there was a pile, he piled on like he was actually doing something. Edom, while not actively involved, made life miserable for the Israelites. They stood on the sideline while Israel suffered the consequences. Not a very nice way for their brothers to act. Yet we notice as we go through there that Edom was not the only sideline rooters that there were throughout the text. In Acts chapter 7, we find a fellow by the name of Stephen. Stephen spoke up for the Lord, and because of it, Stephen was stoned to death. If you look in Acts chapter 7, at verse 58, he says, when they had driven him out of the city, they began stoning him, and the witnesses laid aside their robes at the feet of a young man named Saul. The text never tells us that Saul ever cast a stone, but he was there witnessing all of it, and he was holding the robes for those who were casting the stones. We might say he was rooting for them. In the first verse of chapter 8, it says, Saul was in hearty agreement with putting him to death. He didn't do it. He never threw a rock. But he sure stood there and rooted those on that were throwing the rocks. You know the old attaboy? He stood there while they did so and rooted them on. The Pharisees, while they were never involved themselves in killing any of the prophets, they certainly approved of the killings. Look in Luke chapter 11, verses 47 and 48, where Jesus says, woe to you, for you build the tombs of the prophets, and it was your fathers who killed them. So you are witnesses and approve the deeds of your fathers, because it was they who killed them, and you build their tombs. They didn't do anything wrong. They never killed a prophet. Yet they approved of those that did. I didn't do anything. I'm not guilty. I didn't do it. Yet they approved of those who did. When we look a little bit further, we look in Romans chapter 1, a passage or a chapter at least that most people today would just as soon remove from their Bible because it condemns the lifestyle of the people of today. But I want you to look at verse 32. Although they knew the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, look at the rest of the passage, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. I'm not involved. When you look at it today, you see that homosexuality in one form or another, I know they like to call it, what is it, LGBT? They can give it any name they want to give it. It's homosexuality. It's sodomy that goes on. But I'm not involved in it. But it's okay if they are. They have every right to be. I'm being sarcastic, folks. Would you like for me to pull out the sermon on it? I'm being sarcastic. My point is that oftentimes people are not involved in the activity, but they are sideline rooters. It's okay. Go ahead. You have every right to do so. We continue on looking a little bit further. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. What did Paul say to those people in Corinth? He said it is actually reported that there is immorality among you. Now, understand what he is talking about right here. He is writing a letter to the Lord's church, to Christians who are supposed to be following God's dictates and worshiping God. And he says, there is immorality among you, and immorality of such a kind as does not exist even among the Gentiles. He said it's not just simply adultery or fornication, something along those lines, or immodest dress. He says it's the kind that even the Gentiles would be ashamed of. And yet, someone has his father's wife. We spend an awful lot of time talking about that passage. We talk about it and we try to figure out whether or not it was his mother or maybe it was his stepmother. Folks, that's not the point and it doesn't matter. He was living with this woman, his father's wife. The Gentiles would have condemned that. And yet here are these Christians, and he's doing it openly in front of them, and what does the rest of it say? You have become arrogant and have not mourned instead, so that the one who has done this deed would be removed from you. You have become arrogant. Oh, it's okay. Go ahead. There's not a problem. It's your business. It's your life. As you look at these things, you find that there are what we could call sideline rooters throughout the text, the Old Testament and the New Testament. They weren't involved. They were just standing on the sidelines rooting those that were involved on, cheering for them. Hey, go ahead. Do it. It's okay. It would be all right, and I'd end the sermon right there, except for one problem. It goes on in the church today. It goes on with members of the Lord's church today. People see bad things happen to their enemies. They see bad things happen to their enemies. This guy was going down the road. Instead of doing 45, he was doing 58, and the camera caught him. And he got a ticket. Okay, go ahead and smile. chuckle to yourself a little bit. He got caught. Serves him right. He got caught. Yep. Yep. Poor thing. I feel so sorry for him. Somebody gets fired at work. Hey, man. Did you hear? He lost his job. He got fired. Think about it. Think about it. We oftentimes find ourselves not engaged in anything in particular, but rooting for those that have had misfortune. No, we don't say, "I'm glad it happened to you." Not out loud anyway. But we still say it. We find people watching television and movies, sex, violence, vulgarity, all of these things. We wouldn't consider being engaged in that. But we enjoy watching someone else that's engaged in it. We wouldn't consider having an affair, but it's okay if they do. I may have told you all this, I don't remember. I believe, if I remember correctly, it was 1974. Yes, folks, I'm getting older. I believe it was 1974. I was in a motel in Bellingham, Washington, watching a television station out of Vancouver, Canada. And you know what came on that television station? A lady without a bodysuit on, advertising lingerie. Big deal. We see that on the television every day, don't we? Why am I even bringing it up? It was rather shocking because that was a shock to the morals of that day. Today, we see it on television every day. And now, don't answer me, but I want you to answer yourself. I want you to examine yourself. When you see things like that on television, what do you do? You go to the movies. Heard somebody make this statement once about a movie. I don't remember what the movie was. But they made this statement about the movie. There really wasn't a whole lot of bad words in it. If there was one, that's too many. But we have become accustomed to it. So we sit back and say, that's okay. I'm not engaged in it. It's okay. We wouldn't kill, but we watch when other people are killed on television, in movies. And sometimes we even sit there and say, you know, they had it coming. Let's look at it from a different perspective for just a moment. people, the Lord's people, in Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20, are encouraged, if you will. Well, maybe not encouraged. They are commanded, but we'll use the word encouraged. They are encouraged to go out and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them all things that Jesus has commanded. Okay. Let's encourage our preacher to do that very thing. But I don't have time. But I'll encourage him to do it. Did you know that the person who says, "I don't have time," you know what they really said? "I don't want to." Now you think about that for just a minute. If it's something that you really want to do, don't you always find the time to do it? You make time somehow to fit it into your schedule. When you say, "I don't have time," what you said is, "I don't want to." Besides that, folks, let's face it. That's what we hired the preacher to do. That's his job. No, it's not. Not any more than it is any other Christian's job. We expect the elders to visit the needy because that's what elders are supposed to do. But we don't go ourselves. We demand that others teach classes. We need Bible class teachers. Just don't ask me. In Hebrews chapter 5 at verse 12, the writer says, "Though by this time you ought to be teachers, you have need again of someone to teach you the elementary principles of the oracles of God, and have come to need milk and not solid food." We might call those people, let me back up a little bit. We might call those people armchair quarterbacks. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 23 at verse 4, speaking of the Pharisees, "They tie up heavy burdens and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves are unwilling to move them with so much as a finger." But understand, even though I have talked about all of these things that we're looking at and the fact that people will root other people on but won't get involved themselves, not all sideline rooting is bad. Your support of the gospel tonight, your support of the preaching tonight, your support of the song leading tonight, your support of the prayers tonight is a good thing. You may not be directly involved in standing up here and presenting this lesson. You may not have been directly involved, and by the way, Chris, you did a good job in leading the singing, but you certainly support those who do. The needy. Now, let me back up. Your presence at funerals, weddings, things of this nature that take place is important because it supports the people that are involved. The danger is if we're always on the sidelines and never get personally involved. when we look at it. We find oftentimes, I'll go back to my chart now, oftentimes, people opposing good works. They may not realize that they are doing so, but they are opposing good works. You know, there's an old saying, Gary understands this one, he and I have talked about it. The preacher generally does the job of the elders. The elders generally do the job of the deacons. The deacons generally do the job of the members. The members generally warm the pews. Someone needs to hear the gospel. Call the preacher. Someone needs help. Call the elders. The children need to be taught. Get someone. The wife of the preacher or the wife of one of the elders. Get them to do it. It never amazes or never ceases to amaze me. And by the way, guys, I'm glad you didn't ask Luis this question. But it never ceases to amaze me. Generally, when you go someplace to talk to them about the work, maybe it was because Luis's wife wasn't with him. If the wife is there, the guy who's seeking the work will go have a meeting with the men of the congregation. Well, while that's happening, the women get their shot at his wife. And invariably, the question comes up, can you teach Bible classes? We need a class teacher. Get the preacher's wife. Here I am, Lord. Send someone else. The building needs to be maintained. Get somebody else. Missionaries, preachers need to be sent out. Get someone else. I don't want to go. Many Christians are content to hide in the hills just as Edom did when there is work to be done. Get somebody else. Supporting evil. Supporting evil will bring the judgment of God. Edom was doomed not because of what they did, but because of what they supported. If you turn back to Obadiah once again, and you look at verses 15 and 16, he says, "For the day of the Lord draws near on all the nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your dealings will return on your own head. Because just as you drank on my holy mountain, all the nations will drink continually. They will drink and swallow and become as if they had never existed." Because of what they had done, not the fact that they had actively been engaged in fighting with Israel, but the fact that they had supported those who did, they disappeared. Let me ask you a question. Where, get out your map of the world and look at it, Where is the nation of Edom? No, don't get out a map from back in the time of the 10 tribes of Israel. Get out today's map and point out the nation of Edom to me. In verse 10 of Obadiah, God said, "Because of violence to your brother Jacob, you will be covered with shame and you will be cut off forever." After you have looked at your map long enough, you will realize there is no nation of Edom anymore. Because of what they did, God destroyed them. The righteous will ultimately be victorious. Those who oppose will ultimately be destroyed. When the Lord returns, will you be caught on the sidelines rooting against Him? You know, you don't actively have to be against something to be rooting for it. All you have to do to be rooting for it is not be engaged actively against it. You can't sit on the sidelines. We talked about the straddling the fence this morning. You can't sit on the sidelines. Have I told you the little story about Jesus and the devil? And they were having a debate. And Jesus was putting forth His points. The devil was countering them and putting forth his. Jesus was doing the same. They were carrying it on like a debate. And the people that were listening to it started choosing sides. And this went on until everybody had chosen a side except for this one man. This one man, he walked over and he just climbed up and sat down on the top rail of the fence. Jesus and His disciples left. The devil and his disciples left. The man still sitting on the fence. A little while later, the devil comes back and he's looking around like he's trying to find something that he lost. And this man says to him, "What are you looking for? There's no one here but me." And the devil said, "I know. It's time to go." And the man says, "What do you mean, it's time to go? I didn't choose you. I didn't choose him. I just sat down on the fence." The devil said, "I know. I own the fence." Jesus said, "He who is not with me is against me." Sideline rooters are those who unknowingly, perhaps, are in the devil's camp. You are either actively engaged in the work of the Lord, or you are actively engaged, or passively, if you would like for me to say that, engaged in fighting against Him. The question is tonight, where are you? Are you ready to get into the game? Are you ready to get off of the sidelines and become actively engaged in the game? Standing on the sidelines rooting is one way to be safe. You don't get hurt. But when it comes to the spiritual world, standing on the sidelines rooting is going to cost you your soul. The question is, where are you today? If you've never obeyed the gospel, why not do so tonight? You know, you tell yourself, I'm not doing anything bad. I'm as good as. You're using the wrong standard. You need to change your idea of good and bad and do what's right. Get off the sideline. Get in the game. If you have once been in the game, but for some reason or other, you decided you wanted to go back on the sidelines, maybe being in the game hurt too bad. You need to repent of that, and you need to get back in the game. Maybe you're having trouble staying in the game. You need to ask for some help and support. You know, when you play sports, in fact, almost anything that you do in life, but when you play sports, sometimes it gets very discouraging. You go out there and you give it your best, and it seems like it's never quite good enough. You still lose. So, why try? Because the next game, if you keep trying, you just might win. Same thing applies to this. Sometimes you look at it and you say, why try? Look at the world. It's not worth the effort anymore. You just might win if you stay in the game. If you're subject to the invitation of the Lord, whether it be you need to obey the gospel for the first time, whether there's sin in your life that you need to repent of, or whether you simply need the prayers of the saints, whatever it might be, if you find yourself in need this evening, don't wait till tomorrow. Take advantage of the opportunity that is presented to you now as we stand and sing the song that has been selected.
When we walk with the Lord in the light of His